Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
We have some very conservative people. We have some very liberal people. We all see value in this particular piece of legislation.
A bipartisan group of freshman legislators proposed term limits for lawmakers in Juneau. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, March 24th. Good evening. I'm Laurie Townsend. Also tonight, Indigenous dancers and musicians converge on Bethel for the first full Chamay Festival in 3 years.
You're not going to be bored. You're not going to be bored. I'll tell you that.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's 3 universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
A bill has been filed in the Alaska House of Representatives that would call for a constitutional amendment relating to term limits for legislators. House Joint Resolution 12 was filed Wednesday by a bipartisan group of freshman legislators. If passed by the legislature, the bill would present voters with a ballot question at the next general election, asking if there should be a change in state law to allow for only 6 full terms for House members and 3 full terms for senators. Those totals would be for life, so legislators wouldn't be able to leave for 1 term and return as a candidate or nominee for a seat in their respective bodies. However, a representative could spend 12 years in the House, followed by 12 years in the Senate, should they run and be elected to both bodies. The primary sponsor, Representative Andrew Gray, spoke to the impetus behind the bill.
Alaska has a citizen legislature. That's our model. We don't have professional politicians or aren't seeking to have a professional legislator. We want folks who are everyday people who live and work in their communities and then come to Juneau for a few months each year to do the work of state government.
Gray added that the time restriction wouldn't begin until the 34th legislature, and lawmakers serving when the statute came into effect would be grandfathered in. More than 2 decades, he says, is quite enough time to accomplish legislative goals.
If you've been doing it for 24 years, if you have things that you really wanted to achieve and you weren't able to achieve them in those 24 years, then maybe it's time to give somebody else a chance.
The bipartisan nature of the bill, which has 8 co-sponsors split between Republicans and Democrats, is uncommon in the legislature. Gray says this group of 9 legislators want to break that mold.
The backgrounds, in terms of political backgrounds, really ran the gamut. And I think we wanted that on display. We wanted to say, hey, we have some very conservative people. We have some very liberal people. We all see value in this particular piece of legislation. And I think showcasing that in the co-sponsors was really important to all of us.
The bill was read across the House floor on Wednesday and referred to the House Judiciary and State Affairs Committees. A new report suggests Alaska lawmakers have nearly $680 million less in expected revenue for the upcoming budget year amid lower oil prices and production outlooks. The State Revenue Department's spring forecast also revises expectations for the current year ending June 30th. The report says general fund revenue for this year is expected to be about $245 million lower than what the department forecast in December. This comes as the House Finance Committee works on its version of a state budget. Whatever passes the House will go to the Senate for consideration, and differences between the two chambers are typically settled in negotiations. Fairbanks-based Golden Valley Electric Association is working with the National Renewable Energy Lab on a plan to shut down one of the state's last coal-fired power plants. The utility will replace Healy Unit 2 with wind power to reduce the co-op's reliance on price-volatile fossil fuels, which generate 90% of its electricity. The goal is to stabilize and reduce rates that are among the highest in the country, KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Healy Power Plant was built in the 1990s by the Federal Department of Energy as a demonstration project for so-called clean coal technology. But the agency shut it down after 2 years of unsuccessful efforts to bring it into operation. Golden Valley bought the plant in 2013, but the utility also was unable to keep the plant running. And last year, the co-op's board voted to shut it down. John Burns is Golden Valley's president and CEO.
After a certain point in time, you got to stop banging your head against the wall.
Burns says Golden Valley leadership thought Healy 2 could be modified to operate and provide cheap and reliable electricity generated by coal. But the technology that many considered promising proved unworkable.
And so when Healy 2 is projected to run and doesn't run, we are left with scrambling around to find alternative energy to take over from that loss.
When that happens, Golden Valley always tries first to buy power from utilities in South Central Alaska that generate lower cost electricity with natural gas and hydro. But when those utilities don't have surplus power to send up the interties, the co-op must replace Healy 2's output with power it generates, mainly with diesel. He says that makes it hard for both Golden Valley and its members to plan their budgets.
That cost of power can go up and down huge. You know, the huge vacillations in it, and how do you plan?
Golden Valley generates 90% of its electricity with fossil fuels, and its customers face some of the highest costs in the country. And the pandemic and its ripple effects aggravated that price volatility. Burns says that between June 2020 and June 2022, the fuel purchase charge on customers' monthly bills doubled.
Our ratepayers, they're pretty patient. You know, they understand that we don't control the price of power because it's a pass-through. But what they demand and what they're entitled to ask the question, well, what are you going to do about it?
Golden Valley answered that question by replacing Healy 2's output with wind. The plan calls for integrating larger wind farms into Golden Valley's system and battery energy storage systems to back up all that variable power. And for help with that, they turned to the National Renewable Energy Lab, or NREL.
The focus is, of course, dealing with the aging power plant replacement here, and also to lower costs and also to lower emissions.
Bruno Gruno is the regional director of the lab's Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks, and he says NREL chose Golden Valley for a pilot project to test the capabilities of the lab's Clean Energy to Communities program.
So when folks were creating this program, they thought, what's a tough nut to crack in terms of a clean energy transition? And wouldn't you know, it'd be ours, right?
If we can do it in some of the hardest places on Earth, that makes it easier for us to do it in some of the easier places.
Sherry Stout manages NREL's state, local, and tribal programs out of the agency's headquarters in Golden, Colorado. She's worked with utilities around the country and in Alaska, so she's aware of the state's unique energy challenges, especially in integrating renewable energy into a small grid.
Down here, lower 48, it's pretty easy to like slap solar onto the grid in most places. Some solar and batteries, wind. Fairbanks isn't that. As you well know, Fairbanks is a winter-dominated load.
Stout says the lab has learned a lot about how Golden Valley has managed that load and how it plans to transition from its reliance on fossil fuels to renewable energy.
But we've got, you know, a great partner in Fairbanks, great partners in terms of providing data. Data is a huge part of this.
She says the agency has expertise and information on funding sources like the federal infrastructure bills that it wants to share with other co-ops that are trying to reduce their use of fossil fuels. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a play about politics and basketball centered around a friendly game in China.
This play's been produced in the lower 48 a number of times now. I think I might be one of the first or only directors that comes from having played the game.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree programs with life-friendly, flexible scheduling and course delivery options grounded in real-life experience. Alaska Pacific University offers innovative programming in nursing, counseling psychology, outdoor and environmental public health, and more. Financial aid is available. Advance your career with APU today. Learn more and apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Former Juneau area chiropractor Jeffrey Fultz was arraigned Wednesday after two more women accused him of assaulting them under the guise of medical treatment. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
Superior Court Judge Daniel Shally denied requests to keep Fultz in Alaska until the case is decided. Police arrested Fultz in 2021 on charges of sexual assault based on accusations that he had assaulted patients while he was a chiropractor for Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. More women came forward after his arrest. He now faces accusations from a total of 14 victims, with 18 felony sexual assault charges and one misdemeanor harassment charge. Fultz has been living in Colorado since 2021. And since 2021, some of Fultz's accusers have been asking for him to be returned to Alaska. A woman that the courts are identifying as CEL testified Wednesday. She said, quote, "It's about ensuring that not one more woman is harmed. His knowledge of systems and connections to power and resources has allowed him to continue to abuse women all over the nation." Shally said this was the first time he'd heard of any allegations towards Fultz in other places. But at a court hearing on July 12, 2021, then Assistant District Attorney Jesselyn Gillum said she saw the same pattern. And according to court documents, Fultz told Juneau police in 2021 that he'd been accused of improper touching at a previous job. Fultz worked in the Navajo Nation in New Mexico and Arizona from 1999 to 2013. At the request of the state prosecutor, Bailey Wolfstead, Shally did order that Fultz be monitored through the Alaska Pretrial Enforcement Division. That agency will be in contact with law enforcement in Colorado to make sure he isn't practicing medicine. Conditions Shally placed on Fultz in 2021 required that he not practice medicine or contact any of his accusers. He was also told to turn over his passport and continue living at his Durango home. Fultz's next readiness hearing is on April 12th. Last week, Gillum told KTOO that the number of witnesses in the case and other complicating factors mean that the trial date will likely be set far in the future. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Arctic leaders and ambassadors from 20 countries will be meeting in Anchorage for the Arctic Encounter Symposium next week. Founder Rachel Kalander bills it as the largest Arctic convening in North America.
We're hosting leaders from the U.S., Canada, Iceland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and then many states as well that have interest in the Arctic or are observer states with the Arctic Council.
The Arctic Encounter Symposium has taken on new importance since the Arctic Council went dormant last year. That was due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. It's Russia's turn to chair the council, and the other member countries have condemned the invasion, so they put council meetings on pause until the chairmanship passes to Norway this year. Kalander says Norway's senior Arctic official is slated to articulate his country's priorities for the council.
At the top of many people's mind is national security and sort of the future of the Arctic Council and the diplomatic efforts and cooperation among states in the Arctic, given the conflict that started last year with Russia.
The conference runs March 29th through the 31st. Students can get free tickets to the conference sessions. Bethel is preparing for its first full Chamayev Festival in 3 years. Dance groups from all over the state and a few visitors from outside are headed to the community for a three-day celebration. KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello stopped by a rehearsal and has this story.
A couple of days before Chamay, people gathered inside the ONC multipurpose room. The building used to be an old bowling alley. Long gone are the bowling balls and gutters, but the wood floors are still there. To the left, where the lanes used to be, there's a stage where five male drummers sit at its edge. At the center is the lead drummer.
My name is Benjamin Agimuk. The name of the group is Kazrigamut. So what we use is called
their drums are hoops with a few grooves where they stretch a nylon-type fabric.
You know, just kind of get them as tight as possible, but try to have it at the right tune level. Other drums, as you've seen, where they spray water on it, that's walrus stomach, which was traditionally used back then before the fabric came along.
They start another song. It's a slow build. The drum strikes crescendo and undulate. All five drummers beat. The room breathes. The dancers are split by gender. There are nearly 10 boys, from toddlers to teenagers. They face the drummers. And behind them, about 25 more young girls to mature women. elders are sitting nearby. Some watch, some nod in approval.
I've been doing this for, I've been in dancing for 24 years, but I've been drumming since about 2010.
Rhythm fills the space. The people dance. Each movement is precise. They are in unison, driven by the strike. Heat radiates and the room temperature rises. They take breaks.
We have approximately 8 drummers, possibly more. Not everyone's here, but we try to use as many drummers as possible. But, you know, in a way without overdoing it. So I'm projecting about 6 drummers during Jamai.
As the dancers' feathers float like waves, or more appropriately, like the northern lights on clear nights at Tundra Ridge, the senses can only take so many pulses, so they take another break.
A lot of it is, you know, based on, you know, what we see, what we hear, what we do. A lot of them have meaning, powerful meaning. Like, first song we did is a blessing song, you know, it's not to be messed with, not to be played with. It's been around for a long time.
The group was created in 2019 with the intention of attracting youth to learn traditional dances passed down from generations.
You know, I was just pointing out the history of, you know, how things used to be. You know, the elders used to be very strict with who can drum, who can dance, who can sing. If you didn't dance, you know, with meaning, like stretching your arms out, moving your body, moving your neck, you were not permitted to dance, you know. And if you were a drummer and you were off tune or off beat, you were not permitted to drum. And that's kind of what I was trying to, you know, let out, you know, implement, you know, let the dancers really express themselves.
The drumsticks are rigid like bone, an extension of their hands, pushing each beat through the air. Bodies sway like trees, sometimes slow like a calm spring breeze. Sometimes they shake like trees during an early fall storm. They stop moving when the drums stop beating. This is a glimpse of Jamai.
It's very big, it's very popular. You'll see groups from around the state. So you'll see different kinds of dancing. Each of them are unique. All the groups are unique in their own way. So, you know, you're not going to be bored. You're not going to be bored, I'll tell you that.
Heads bob like birds. Voices reverberate. They all know these verses well, passed from the creator to the elders and now to youth. The sun sets. It's getting late. On stage, all the elders sway in rhythmic syncopation. Some sing, some dance, if they're physically able to. Most bob, but they all move until they are satisfied. And only then will the rehearsal stop. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
It's been more than 4 years since a November 2018 earthquake rattled south-central Alaska, damaging the Houston Middle School building beyond repair. Yesterday, officials cut the ribbon on the new school in Houston. Ben Howard was principal of Houston Middle and is now the Houston High School principal.
We knew deep down that our time was coming. We knew a new school would be built and that we would thrive in it. Ladies and gentlemen, that day is now.
High school students will attend classes in the new building, while middle school students will stay put in the old high school. The new school has updated career and technical education facilities. Howard thanked the Mat-Su Borough Assembly, who helped fund construction of the school, as well as state legislators and Governor Mike Dunleavy. Dunleavy toured the wreckage of Houston Middle School days after the magnitude 7.1 quake and cut the ribbon in the new Houston High School gym. Dunleavy noted that during the quake, Houston middle schoolers helped get their teachers and fellow classmates safely out of the building.
And I want to thank again the staff, the teachers, the students, because what you demonstrated on that day, I think makes all of us proud to be Alaskans. So I want to thank you.
Over a dozen portable classrooms were relocated to Houston after the earthquake, and for the last 4 years, Houston middle and high school students have squeezed into that building. Students who were seventh graders during the quake are now seniors and provided the backdrop for the ribbon cutting on Thursday. Food shortages, along with higher costs, are among the challenges experienced in rural Alaska during the pandemic. But Old Harbor on Kodiak Island had its community bison herd and gardens as a fallback, part of a long-time effort to bring down the high cost of food to a village accessible only by boat and airplane. The Old Harbor Alliance, a group which includes the tribe, the city, and the village's native corporation, bought about 40 bison in 2017 and barged them to Sitka-Leduc Island across from Old Harbor. Since then, the Alliance has built a processing plant to butcher surplus bison, which has filled up freezers with meat, distributed to community members at no cost, with priority going to elders. Melissa Burns-Svoboda, who manages the herd, says it's taught Old Harbor an important lesson.
Anything's possible. I mean, this was kind of a pie-in-the-sky dream that I've heard our leadership talking about since the early 2000s, and they kept on pushing for it, and we made it happen.
The Alliance took a big step in 2020 when it added three bulls from the Fort Peck Indian Reservation in Montana to improve the herd's genetic diversity. The bison, which were surplus animals from Yellowstone National Park, had to travel in trucks, airplanes, and barges to reach their final destination, but today seem to have adapted to their new home. As the herd continues to grow and thrive, the bison have also fed the community's spirit with hunts that bring families together. Permits have been given to those who have moved away.
It's kind of a way to reconnect people to their roots and provide for them at the same time.
Well, the Old Harbor Alliance recently added about 60 animals to its herd barged in from another part of Kodiak Island. The long-range goal is to use the surplus bison to grow the community's cash economy through visitor hunting permits and the sale of meat. Any profits will be used to support the meat processing plant and community gardens, as well as cultural programs which teach children about their Aleutic heritage and language. The herd now has more than 160 bison, four times what it was when the program began 6 years ago. The Alliance is holding a fundraiser in Kodiak this Saturday to raise money for its programs, as well as share information about how to raise a community bison herd. Basketball goes from the courts to the stage in the Perseverance Theater play The Great Leap. It's been performed in partnership with the University of Alaska Anchorage. As Rhonda McBride shows us, it's a story that's a fast-paced mixture of both basketball and politics.
The Great Leap is about a friendship basketball game in China and a reunion between an American and Chinese coach who met almost two decades earlier when the game was first introduced to China. The coaches are friends, but friends who constantly disagree.
18 years. That's how long you got. You start at 18, and you're lucky if you hit 36 and you can still run down the court without blowing your knees out. And you want to know why?
Because you Americans are always running. You can never wait your turn.
It is always your turn.
The story is set in June of 1989, amid the backdrop of student protests against the Chinese government. The name of the play, The Great Leap, has a double meaning, a metaphor for the game of basketball, yet also taken from a failed communist campaign to industrialize the country called The Great Leap Forward.
This play has been produced in the lower 48 a number of times now. I think I might be one of the first or only directors that comes from having played the game.
Leslie Ishii is Perseverance Theater's artistic director. She says The Great Leap definitely has a way of bringing some March Madness to the stage.
The part that I love about this play is the dialogue in the play is actually like the scrimmage. The metaphor of basketball is all throughout the psychology of the game. And while we don't feature an actual game itself, we're working on putting a little basketball in there, a little finesse in there.
I will win you games. I will score you points. I will make you layups. I will shoot from half court, full court. I will shoot over whatever, whenever, whoever is getting in my way.
Manford, a young hotshot basketball player from the streets of Chinatown, is one of the main characters in the play. The only problem is he's a little short for a basketball player.
I am quick. I am relentless. I am the most relentless person you have ever met. And if you have met someone more relentless than me, tell me, tell me, and I will meet them, and I will find a way to become even more relentless than them.
Manford's fast-talking bid to make the team does get him to China, but when he gets caught up in the student protests, he jeopardizes his spot on the team. Ishii says the play goes from being a dark comedy to a serious drama.
So it's an interesting time to do this play when we've had so many conversations about our democracy, right? And again, basketball's a dear, beloved sport in Alaska.
Ultimately, Ishii hopes the play will make you think as it explores the tensions between two cultures. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Greg Knight in Nome, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Francisco Martinez-Cuello in Bethel, Tim Rocky in Houston, and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us, news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. Ensure the vitality of public radio by including it in your estate planning. Together, we build a sustainable future for quality media. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.